In any case, Skip and I survived. We did the makeup work, squeaked through the finals, and returned to Chamberlain Hall in mid-January. Skip told me he'd written a letter to John Winken, the baseball coach, over the holiday, saying he'd changed his mind about coming out for the team. Nate was back on Chamberlain 3. So, amazingly, was Lenny Doria, on academic pro, but there. His paisan, Tony DeLuca, was gone, though. So were Mark St. Pierre, Barry Margot, Nick Prouty, Brad Witherspoon, Harvey Twiller, Randy Eccles, and Ronnie, of course. We got a card from him in March. It was postmarked Lewiston and simply addressed to the Yo-Yos of Chamberlain 3. We taped it up in the lounge, over the chair where Ronnie had most often sat during the games. On the front was Alfred E. Newman, the Mad Magazine cover boy. On the back, Ronnie had written, "Uncle Sam calls and I gotta go. Palm trees in my future, and who gives an F blank blank K? What me worry? I finished with 21 match points. That makes me the winner." It was signed, Ron. Skip and I had a laugh at that. As far as we were concerned, Mrs. Malenfant's foul-mouthed little boy was going to be a Ronnie until the day he died. Stoke Jones, a.k.a. Rip Rip, was also gone. I didn't think of him much for a while, but his face and memory came back to me with startling, if brief, vividness a year and a half later. I was in jail at the time, in Chicago. I don't know how many of us the cops swept up outside the convention center on the night Hubert Humphrey was nominated, but there were a lot, and a lot of us were hurt. A Blue Ribbon Commission would a year later designate the event a police riot in its report. I ended up in a holding cell meant for 15 prisoners, 20 max, with about 60 gassed out, punched out, drugged out, beat up, messed up, worked over, fucked over, blood all over hippies. Some smoking joints, some crying, some puking, some singing protest songs. From far over in the corner, issuing from some guy I never even saw, came a stoned-out version of, "I'm not marching anymore." It was like some weird penal version of telephone booth cramming. I was jammed up against the bars, trying to protect my shirt pocket, Paul Mall's, and my hip pocket, the copy of Lord of the Flies Carol had given me, now very battered, missing half its front cover and falling out of its binding. When all at once, Stoke's face flashed into my mind as bright and complete as a high-resolution photograph. It came from nowhere, it seemed, perhaps the product of a dormant memory circuit which had gone momentarily hot, joggled by either a nightstick to the head or a revivifying whiff of tear gas. And a question came with it.